Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Roberta's Pizza, robertaspizza.com.
I'm Linda Palacio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We're back. It's episode 150 of Arts and Seizures. Can you dig it? Liz, 150. Whoa! And they said it wouldn't last. And even though Judy McGuire is still being featured in our awesome theme music, she went on Rumspringa and never came back. Sitting in for her today is the entirely awesome proprietor of my favorite dessert speakeasy, Kimberly Weatherell.
The only dessert speakeasy.
I love your joint. I was glad we finally made it by the other night. And, you know, it was just absolutely wonderful. It was like booze and dessert. What could be better?
There's not a whole lot. Bacon, maybe. Bacon, booze, and dessert.
I think this whole fried things and booze.
Fried, boozy things, I yes. Think delightful.
It is really good. And we're all here. It's raining cats and dogs today. And you know how I know? Because I just stepped in a poodle.
Okay.
Not really worthy. So I wanted to segue that into saying let's slip out of these wet things and into a dry martini, okay, which is a real round table quip. Lots of quips today because we're going to be talking about the Algonquin Round Table and Dorothy Parker, although I believe that last bit is actually Robert Benchley. Although, what were you saying, Kevin? In the future, everything will be
attributed to Dorothy Parker.
Yeah, that's what George S. Kaufman said. He said after he died, everything I ever said or wrote would be attributed to Dorothy Parker, and that's really happening.
So, Kim, why don't you introduce our awesome guest today? Because we're gonna be drinking rum. We're going to be talking about the round table. This is going to be the best 150th episode we've ever had.
Absolutely. It's like a triple diamond, right? The diamond is the 50th or is that 75th? I'm actually... either a double diamond or triple diamond. Regardless, it's a multi-diamond episode. And congratulations, Mike.
Well, thank you.
On all of this. And thank you so much for having me. This is my second time in the studio now, and I love it here. Thank you
so
much.
It's good. You're climbing the ladder to success.
That's right.
It's kind of like the Johnny...
One broken rung at a time.
It's kind of like the Johnny Carson show. You see, like, you moved over one seat, one gets left, you moved over. They don't do that on talk shows anymore, right? It's because, like, someone leaves, the next person comes on. Or the old Johnny Carson show.
Everybody hangs out
okay.
with everybody else.
I mean, Bridget, you're very young. Maybe you don't remember the Johnny Carson show. But that's the way it was. So you have, like, these weird oddball guests where you'd have, like, George Hamilton sitting next to Ted Nugent. Or, you know?
And then Charo.
Always Charo. And McMahon. They'd all be sitting on the same couch. And why?
Exactly. You know. So today, our guests, we have with us Kevin Fitzpatrick, author of Under My Host, which is a Dorothy Parker cocktail book, which is how I found him when we were doing a food and drink reading series at Housing Works bookstore called Dish. And his new book is The Algonquin Roundtable New York, which is a historical guide to all things roundtable and everything in addition to Dorothy Parker, because she... obviously is maybe the face of the round table, but there are lots of members sitting around.
And a really fine New York history book, too, I might add. I mean, beyond the round table, I learned an awful lot of stuff reading that book.
Well, it's really fun when you look at history from a singular point of view. If you look at, like, the book Salt or Cod, you're looking at one aspect, but you're getting the entire history.
Right. And the life and times, a lot of times the times are just as important.
Yeah. So it's really, it's a fascinating book. I'm really excited
to dig
in.
All right,
Kevin
Fitzpatrick, and we're going to talk about
and
then Dorothy Parker.
Ironically, and wonderfully connected, is Bridget Fertel, who is the master distiller, proprietress, founder, rum runner extraordinaire of Oni's Rum, which is made right here in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
A woman who makes rum.
And yes. Iran, she'll tell us the story, but the naming of her rum is actually directly connected to the Algonquin Round Table. So what a coinkydink.
Yeah.
So welcome to
Ditch. Happy to be here.
I'm assuming it's Oni Madden.
Yes, sir.
All right. So tell us about your life in crime, Bridget.
And remember, we're on the radio.
I'm not supposed to admit those things, right?
We were talking before, too. I mean, distilling rum, I mean, I don't know that it's really a gig for women traditionally. I think you're kind of breaking the glass ceiling of somehow or some way, right?
Yeah, I think that we're actually, I think, the world's first only all-female distillery. Someone might be able to correct me on that, but I haven't come across another one. And that just was happenstance. It was the talent available at the time, and we actually have four females running this
Where
place.
Did you learn how to run your still?
Self-taught. And so I spent about a year and a half to 2 years reading everything I could under the sun about fermentation science and distillation, and I visited a bunch of distilleries.
Yeah, don't be shy, Kevin. Just have some rum.
Yeah, there you go. Come on.
Lizzie, have you tried the rum yet?
Oh, I have. Yeah,
Lizzie's giving me a thumbs up, which you've got.
Yeah, double thumbs up. I drink it. I bake with it. I baptize people with it. It's a great.
I love to hear that.
It's a great. And I was not a rum drinker before I started baking, like just in general. But more and more, I'm really thank you, Bridget, for allowing me to appreciate
made my day.
The molasses spirit.
Rum is great.
It is.
I mean, it can be really great. I mean, I don't know culturally cocktails. You know, rum and coke. I mean, that's kind of and abusive, way to beat up on bad rum, right? I do like dark rums. I love dark and stormies and some of these.
Favorite.
And now, of course, we can get Cuban rum. We're about to get Cuban rum, which is nice.
Well, rum was actually America's first spirit we distilled in this country, so important to our history throughout the history of the U.S. and drinking.
Yeah, it's also kind of part of like the evil, part of the slave trade.
It started as the slave trade, but then it took off so rapidly here in colonial America that the molasses tax of 1764 actually drove the country into revolution because it made rum distilling unprofitable.
This country does fight for its booze. The Whiskey Rebellion.
It does.
As well. I thought bourbon also was one of the first things that we distilled just because there was corn here.
There's so much corn.
Well, after the revolution, people started moving west and growing grains, and they figured out they could make whiskey from their grains. And so
those stupid bourbon. Pilgrims, what are we going to do? Yeah, distill, make this into booze. Yeah.
No more roasted corn. We're going to mash our corn.
But well-made rum. And I've had some rum that's been so fine. It's almost like cognac in quality and intensity and just like a real nose to it and the whole experience. Is not the Bacardi experience like we all grew up in high school, which generally didn't really end too well.
Yeah. Spring break.
So tell us about this rum. I'm going to try some too.
Yeah, please do. So Oni's is a rum that's made from only three ingredients: good old New York City filtered tap water. I think it's the best in the world,
yes,
and
it
makes great pizza, bagels, and seemingly rum.
It's just so true. And I always say, and this is why you cannot make a bagel anywhere else.
Yeah.
It's partly because we're at sea level, but it has to do with the water.
Yeah. And the second ingredient's an all-natural, non-GMO, high-grade molasses that comes from independent sugarcane farmers in Florida and Louisiana. So it's 100% USA-made product and a proprietary yeast. And the whole vision behind the actual liquid was to not rely on any sugars, preservatives, flavorings, colorings, additives, or a barrel to give it its depth and complexity. So we use the best ingredients and the best technique to lead to something smoky, earthy. Got some banana notes on there as well.
Oh, I could I'd like to set this
so
on
it's
fire
like a fruit. So really, it's
banana.
Healthy, is what you're telling me with the banana, potassium.
I think so.
You should drink it after a long run.
Okay. I'm going down the rum hole right now.
This is
delicious.
So
this is delicious. It would be a crime to make this into a cocktail and dilute it with anything. But if you were to commit that crime, what would you suggest?
I always go, my go-to is a classic daiquiri. The daiquiri has been one of the original cocktails, and most people think it comes from a blender and a box of high fructose corn syrup.
Strawberries.
When a real classic daiquiri is, we like 2 shots of Oni's, a shot of fresh, or sorry, 2 ounces of Oni's, an ounce of freshly squeezed lime juice, and 3/4 of an ounce of simple syrup. Shake it up, serve it up. lime wheel garnish, and you really can't beat it.
It's a gorgeous cocktail, and it pairs beautifully with the light and stormy cookie.
Yes, which we just discovered.
A light and stormy.
Is this a spirited original?
It is a spirited original. We do. We started with the dark and stormy, obviously the play on the classic cocktail using Gosling's rum. But at Spirited, we do have a passion for the local distillers, and we really like to support our fellow Brooklyn entrepreneurs. And the minute I put the light rum as opposed to that dark sweet rum in there, it completely changed the flavor of the cookie, not for the better or for the worse, but you now have two different cookies with the exact same recipe, just save one ingredient.
This is delicious.
Which is awesome, and it pairs beautifully with the daiquiri because you got all that really bright lime and that crisp, bright, delicious rum against the ginger.
I could drink this neat, or even on the rocks, maybe like a twist. You know, not a lot of lime because I don't overpower it, but maybe just to brighten it up a little bit. This is good stuff.
Yeah, it's great.
This is good stuff. And you know, someone said, oh, we're the female distiller, the rum runner. I was thinking like Ma Barker, I guess. You know, I was thinking Shelley Winter and Bloody Mama. You know, Prohibition. You know, just like running on, with your sons, their shotguns and
not the blonde supermodel you see before.
Please.
And you distill stuff right down the street.
Yeah, right on Meadow Street between Bogart and Waterbury and East Williamsburg Bushwick border.
And that's good. That's fantastic. Awesome. Yeah. Right here in our backyard, this runs coming from.
Look at that.
Well,
hyper local.
We are talking about New York history today, and booze plays a big part in this chapter of history, right, Captain Fitzpatrick?
It does. It does indeed.
Well, you wrote a book about the most celebrated ongoing cocktail party of all time.
The Algonquin Roundtable.
For these kids out there who don't know what the Algonquin Roundtable is, because, I'm amazed. When anybody knows anything, I'm impressed, okay? Just because the way seriously, because, anybody who grew up in this post-internet age and they mistake information with knowledge, and they don't really care because they can get it on their phones or whatever the fuck.
We
can Google it, and they're not steeped in the legend of Dorothy Parker and Benchley and the Round Table, nor with the unwashed hipster masses find their way up to a hotel bar in Midtown to try to channel that vibe.
Mm-hmm. Which is a shame, because it is really truly one of the great cocktail bars in New York still to this day. In fact, every time I go to the Algonquin, I get waited on. Oh, and now I'm going to forget his name because I haven't been there in a while, which is embarrassing. But I have been served by the same waiter at the Algonquin, and I've been living in New York for 15 years, and the exact same man.
Is it Chuck?
I can't remember. I feel like his name starts with a J. But he's a lovely gentleman, and even if he doesn't remember me, he always appears to remember me, and that's one of the things that I certainly take with me in the service industry, that it's not just about the drink, it's not just about the food, it's about the way you're treated and the experience and the decadence, and there are so few bars that have just the history that the Algonquin has, and none of them have a cat. I mean, none of them.
Mike, do you want the short version, the radio version of the roundtable?
Give me the radio version. This is the fastest half hour on the internet.
Sure.
So
in June 1919, when Alexander Wolcott came back from World War I, he was the drama critic of the Times, and two publicists wanted to get their new show, which is by O'Neill, into the paper. So they took him to the roundtable, to the Algonquin, I should say, to try and get him, to wheedle into the paper. It didn't work out, but they came up with the idea of having a Welcome Back New York luncheon or roast. And who they invited were the cream of the crop of New York writers, editors, columnists, and publicists. And that group that was invited became the Algonquin Roundtable.
Yeah.
Okay. You were right on that. Okay. Okay. I'll take Dorothy Parker for 80. Yeah. So she's obviously the face of the Algonquin Roundtable. So
sure.
We know her. We know her as a very quippy poet, but also a short story writer and a critic.
She joined Vanity Fair. When she was 24, she was the first female drama critic. She was, from the Upper West Side. She was joined by Robert Benchley, Harvard in 1912, Robert E. Sherwood, who went on to win 4 Pulitzer Prizes. I mean, they're just the core group, but there was 30 members of the roundtable, and each one of them was unique and interesting.
That's been pretty rarefied air, though. The people that you mentioned were all successful. I mean, there are no bums there. The odd thing was this all happened during Prohibition years.
That's right. There was actually no drinking in the Algonquin.
Oh, irony.
Oh, irony.
Frank Case, the owner, took the bar out even 2 years before Prohibition, so there was no drinking from about 1917 to 1933.
And when you say no drinking, you mean everybody was drinking like crazy.
Well, I mean, if you run a flask, what are they going to do? But they didn't have a bar there.
But again, it's celebrated as a mutual appreciation society, but a drinking society as well. And some famous cocktails, I think, came out of that scene, too. The Jack Rose, right, was probably pretty popular.
Jack Rose, a lot of the mixed drinks.
What's in a Jack Rose?
Oh, oh, why is everybody looking at me? Oh. I deconstruct cocktails. I don't build them. We should next time have a... We should get Rosie back. Rosie, help us out.
This show is getting boozier and boozier every week.
Wait,
which,
here, I'll
which
Google
is hard
it.
To, which is hard to fucking imagine because this has been like, you know, 150 shows later. I mean, this is my version of the roundtable. This is my clubhouse.
And, I like
and,
it.
And it's getting, you know...
I like it. Well, it's a rectangular table.
Well, it's radio. It can be whatever we want it to be.
That's right. Oh, excuse me. It's a pear-shaped table. Molded.
Where we all get drunk naked and any second when we come back from this break, we'll be
absolutely
pouring
off.
Olive
dude,
oil
he's
on
eating
each other.
Porridge. It's just startled.
This guy with the beard and the ski cap eating his porridge. This is what, by the way, Bridget, what we call the awkward dick table. And this is, for 150 shows, the gift that keeps on giving. We have seen more brunches of shame, but also people in love, but also extremely awkward, like OkCupid dates and... You know, there's a lot. This table does not disappoint.
Provides great content.
You know, you sort of like wonder, you know, who got what they wanted the night before, and we've seen tears. We've
Mike,
seen...
you should tell. I mean, I have Dorothy Parker fans listening right now all over the world because I've been picking
right.
it up. So you need to tell them where we are and what we're doing.
All right, for the Dorothy Parker fans out there all over the world. Okay,
good
evening,
table?
Ladies and gentlemen, and all the ships at sea. Walter Winchell ever make it over to the Algonquin? He was a little bit later.
They hated him.
They hated
him. They hated him.
Yeah. He was not their friend.
Motherfucking Walter Winchell.
Well, man. No, Walter.
When I got Dorothy Parker's FBI file from the government, he was ratting her out to J. Edgar Hoover. So there's letters from Winchell to Hoover.
That scumbag Walter Winchell.
So
fuck
see,
him.
She has a reason to be bitter. See, people always credit her with... Well, I mean, I imagine she was a pretty unhappy woman, just in general, but funny. No, funnily
sure.
unhappy.
But yeah, Winchell was...
Dorothy Parker unhappy?
Maybe.
A little.
A little?
A bit.
A lot?
So tell these
a
guys
bit.
That are listening.
Yes,
I
mean, so where
all right,
are
so
we?
All right, so we are here at the Heritage Radio Network, which founded by my friend and co-author, Patrick Martins. We wrote a book together last year called The Carnivore's Manifesto. He started it here at the back of Roberta's restaurant here in Bushwick at the often called the epicenter of hip here in Bushwick. But I'll tell you what, these are the kind of hipsters I can dig because they're hardworking and smart and...
like good food. Like good
money.
Drink.
Like good food. And we are in two reconstructed shipping containers. Everything here has been repurposed and rescued. It's a very groovy site. It's become our clubhouse. It's a pretty awesome studio. We have Liz in the booth, and outside this big bay window, we can watch everybody munching on pizzas. The pizzas will be here any second. But before we get there, Liz is making the sign. It's sort of like, coming in hot. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to play a little bit of a Marx Brothers routine. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the Marx Brothers. We're going to talk about the roundtable. We're going to talk to Bridget about rum.
Can I play Harpo?
You can play Harpo. No, wait. That's radio. That doesn't play. That doesn't. No.
Whistle.
Harpo
no.
was the smart
no.
one.
Harpo
no.
whistled on the radio.
No, but when we come back, Kimberly is going to sing for us, right? And
yep.
You're listening to Arts and Seizures on the Heritage Radio Network, live in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Hey, Barabelli.
What do you want?
Watch the door for a few minutes, and don't let anyone in without the password.
All right, what is it?
Swordfish is the password, do you understand?
Okay, I got it.
Well, what is it?
Password.
Swordfish! Swordfish!
Right, the swordfish, the swordfish. Piazza, muscles in the room full of faccia di pazzi. Who are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Who are you?
I'm fine, too, but you can't come in unless you give the password.
Oh, what is the password?
Oh, no, you gotta tell me. Hey, I tell what I do, I give you three guesses. It's the name of a fish.
Is it Mary?
Ha ha! That's an old fish.
She isn't. Well, she drinks like one. Let me see. Is it Sturgeon?
Hey, you're crazy. Sturgeon, he's a doctor who cuts you open when you're sick. Now, I give you one more chance.
I got it. Haddock.
That's funny. I got a haddock, too.
What do you take for a haddock?
Well, now, sometimes I take aspirin or sometimes I take a calomel.
Say, I'd walk a mile for a calomel.
You mean chocolate calomel. I like that, too, but you know, guess it. Hey, what's the matter? You don't understand English? You can't come in here unless you say swordfish. Now, I'll give you one more guess.
Swordfish. Swordfish. I think I got it. Is it swordfish?
That's it. You guess it.
Pretty good, eh?
Fine. You guess it. Or...
What do you want?
I
want
to come in.
What's the password?
Oh, you're no fool of me. Swordfish.
No, I got tired of that. I changed it.
What's the password now?
Gee, I forgot it. I better come outside with you.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
And we're back on Arts and Seizures. Mike Edison here with special guest co-host with the most,
Kimberly Wetherell.
Kimberly Wetherell.
Hello, everyone.
It's awesome. And if only this were TV. we have a very, very good-looking, and now completely naked, crew here today.
That's what happens when you bring Oni's rum to a party.
And when it's getting nuts here. But before we go any further, please remember we are member-supported here at Heritage Radio Network, so please click on the Be a Member Donate button on your web screen if you're listening to the web. And I'll tell you what, if you are the next person to become a member of Heritage Radio, we have a copy of Kevin's book for you about the Algonquin Roundtable. What's the exact title?
Yes, really? The Algonquin Roundtable New York, which is a historical guide. So the first person to respond gets
join. We'll put this right at the top of the queue, and you also get like some amazingly cool tote bag, which is always say much better than
you
anything.
Can carry
those
the book
slackers at NPR
in the tote
give
bag.
You. There you go. You've got it all.
You've got it all.
You've got it all.
Join HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Become a member.
You're doing good.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
You're going to be invited
thank
back.
Thank you very much. And
I see right now the phones are ringing, and the big thermometer we have that like measures how much money we're getting is going through the roof. It's like Jerry Lewis is out, Kimberly is in.
That is right. So, Kevin, can you tell us what does it take to write about a book about the Algonquin Roundtable?
Well, I started because I was doing a walking tour. And the walking tour was taking people to all the places associated with the Roundtable. Mm-hmm. And what was really fun was what I like about literary landmarks and walking tours is taking people to the places of authors that they really like. So the book has the speakeasies they went to, the Broadway theaters where their shows were produced, places associated with the New Yorker, where the New Yorker started. Because what a lot of people don't know about the Roundtable is without them, there might not even be a New Yorker magazine because Harold Ross and Jane Grant, who started the magazine, they used their associations they met at the Algonquin Hotel to get the Roundtable off the ground in 1925. So we go to the places in the book are associated with all the places of their life, all their houses and apartments and jobs and where they were born and went to school. And it's over 150 locations tied to their lives.
Wow. Well, we're here in Brooklyn today. And quick plug for Thursday night at Spirited, we are doing the Brooklyn book launch of this book. So what are the ties to Brooklyn from the Roundtable? Who was the Bridge and Tunnel crowd back then?
Well, Haywood Bruin, one of my favorite people, was a columnist. He was born on Pineapple Street in Brooklyn Heights.
Oh, wow.
Peggy Wood, an Oscar-nominated actress who was on Broadway for 60 years. She was born in Bed-Stuy and grew up in Prospect Park.
Oh, wow. That's really close to Spirited, so that's we're really basically in the backyard.
And Herman Mankiewicz, before he wrote Citizen Kane, he and his wife lived in Gravesend. Many of them, worked for the Brooklyn Eagle and came back and forth. Very strong ties to Brooklyn.
The hipsters of the day.
Yes.
As it were.
I'll tell you, one reason we played the Marx Brothers at the break, aside that it was a speakeasy scene, what I learned from your book, Harpo at least was a regular at the Algonquin, and as I didn't know that there's a Marx Brothers playground named after them, and all I can think of, though, is I'm going to go there, and it's going to be like people doing shtick. It's going to be people singing Captain Spaulding, like little kids, reenacting like, Animal Crackers.
Right.
Oh, that would be amazing. I would definitely go to that.
Well, the Marx Brothers grew up in Yorkville. They're from the German Jewish section of the Upper East Side. And they'd been an act for many years before they really hit it big in 1924 with I'll Say She Is. And part of it in their success is tied into the Roundtable because Alexander Wolcott took the Roundtable to see them and said, you've got to see these brothers. They're my favorite guys on Broadway right now. And that's how they met George S. Kaufman, who wrote some of their biggest hits like Animal Crackers.
Can you sing a little bit of Captain Spaulding for us? Go ahead, Kevin. Go ahead.
I should have brought my friend Noah Diamond because he is a dead-on Groucho. He could have done a great
job. I got to tell you one thing that I'm really thrilled about today is, if you don't mind me saying so, is I think we're just like shattering these traditional gender things. We've got a former Marine as the president of the Dorothy Parker Society, and a beautiful woman is like a rum runner distiller.
I love it.
It's fantastic. That's right. Arts
Welcome
and cheese shattering expectations for 150 shows.
That's
there you
right.
Go.
Well, once again, I'm gonna take some more of this rum. Liz, do you have enough rum back there in the booth? This is like practically under the control board.
under the table.
This is great stuff.
Under the table. One.
I want to ask you guys.
One martini.
Both Bridget and Kim. I'm obsessed with lighting things on fire. But basically, I mean, flambé desserts. It's like a thing, you know.
Yes, they are.
I find it's a good trick. People seem to like it when you set the dessert
people
on fire.
People do like it, and we have an open fire permit. It's ironic that we don't yet have a flambé dessert.
Okay. You and I are going to talk, okay? Because I've been concocting things, and you know, pothead pyromaniac that I am.
People also like it when you set your drink when they set the drink gets set on fire.
The drink gets set on fire.
Tiki culture.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be offended if I set this rum on fire.
Absolutely not. I don't think it would set on fire. Unfortunately, it's not high enough proof. But
what I do is I have to heat it up first. Light on fire at room temperature. But if I use my espresso machine, my cappuccino machine, and steam heat it and got it to a nice hot temperature,
yeah,
or put it in a pan, and
you do this often, don't you?
Yeah. He did learn something that too. He likes to set things on fire.
Well, you know, you learn the first time I made steak au parmesan was a pillar of fire worthy of Charlton Heston as Moses. I mean, it was unbelievable, and I really wasn't expecting it. But I played it cool for the woman I was cooking for. Oh yeah, this is cool. It's what I expected. I somehow managed not to set my apartment on fire. But since then, I've entered the world of Bananas Foster, and I think which calls for cognac. But I think rum would be fantastic.
Yes,
or Cherry's Jubilee.
Yes,
But I think you're talking about bananas, and all I could think of was I'm setting this rum on fire, and I'm pouring it over some bananas and soon.
Yeah. You absolutely have to do that. We've made a Bananas Foster's pie. A Bananas Foster pie.
It's got
this beautiful custard and then the caramelized bananas on top. They're just soaking in rum. It's just pretty amazing.
That's right. That's what I'm not saying I'm a pyromaniac, but really I'm just caramelizing the banana.
That's right. You're caramelizing things. That's right.
So Kevin, if I went up to the Algonquin this afternoon, what would I find there? What vestiges of the past still exist?
Well, there is the round table room. There is a table in the spot where the round table used to be. There's a right now there's actually an Al Hirschfeld exhibit of about 25 of his pieces on the wall to the end of the month. And there's the Blue Bar. And do you know the story behind the Blue Bar?
This is the story about actors always looking in blue light, I believe.
Yes.
Which I know I do. I look very good in blue light.
Well, John Barrymore, Drew Barrymore's grandfather, was a longtime resident of the hotel. And when the bar came back after Prohibition, he said to Frank Case, the owner, actors like the blue light. It's the light that makes you look really good, and it's what you always want in a soliloquy. So they put blue gels in the light, and to this day, the bar has blue lights in the bar.
And the cat, the Algonquin cat?
Matilda. There's been a cat on the premises since 1930.
But not the same cat.
Males are called Hamlet, and females are Matilda. And there's currently a Matilda, and she just got a new house on the front desk, and so she has free reign of the hotel.
She has a house on the front desk.
She has her own Instagram and Twitter, and fans come around.
Oh, I'm going to follow her.
I'm going to follow that Algonquin cat.
I am right now.
She has a birthday party every August that is the thing to do. It's the cat's meow. They raise money for animal charities and do adoptions for the.
Can you think she'd be a guest on our show?
Sure. The cat is awesome. The cat has its own publicist.
I need that number.
Matilda and Grumpy Cat.
Presumably not Walter Winchell. But I need that. I need the number of Matilda's publicist. Grumpy Cat. Right, fuck Grumpy Cat. Matilda's in.
She's a sweetheart. She's a real sweetheart.
completely off the subject. I came late to this, but I just found out about Betty and Veronica, the new bears in Central Park. I was such a fan of Gus and Ida, and then we lost Ida, and then Gus died. Gus was talking about New York City history. He was famous for being the bear that had his own shrink.
Psychiatrist.
It's everybody in New York has a shrink, including the polar bear.
Well, he swam back and forth.
Heard of New York history. I have no idea.
I just cried and cried and cried when we lost Gus, but apparently they have two brown bears, orphans, rescued from, I think, Montana. The brown bears, Betty and Veronica.
Aww.
So I'm looking forward to go visit Betty and Veronica this
sweet.
Week. And I guess maybe I should try to get them on the show. But
arts and seizures for sure. Two brown bears in the studio. I don't know.
That would be more seizures than arts.
More seizures than arts. Absolutely.
Well, I'm digging this rum the most. Tell us where can we find this rum?
So we're in about 300 places throughout New York City. If you go to onis.com, you can find a store locator and a retail place. Obviously, we are prominently featured at Spirited.
Kimberly's
Bakery Speakeasy, and we're in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Washington, D.C., and California.
I got to tell you, this is fantastic stuff, because I'm a bourbon drinker, and I do drink rum, and people have turned me on. My friend Jean-Luc Ledoux at Ledoux's Wines, plug for my buddy, but every year I play a Christmas gig over there, or Thanksgiving wine tasting before Christmas gig, and he pays me in spirits.
That's awesome.
And one year he gave me a bottle of rum, and he was like, no, he's like, whatever you thought about rum is about to change, and it was this very, very high-end distilled rum, and man, it really changed my mind about drinking it neat. You know, as an after dinner drink, as an aperitif, either way, or as just a cocktail, or an eye opener. I could drink this for breakfast.
We're drinking it today.
Or set it on fire and pour it on some bananas.
Absolutely.
All right. As ever, it's been the fastest half hour on the internet today. But before we go, tell us, Kevin, where we can find your book and where we can find you.
You can find the book. Go to IndieBound, and you can put in your zip code, and it'll tell you the closest independent bookstore to your house.
And here at Arts and Seizure, we do encourage people to support their independent bookstores.
Shop local. I saw it yesterday at the Corner Bookstore on 93rd and Madison, so
I'm
I know
sure it's a green light.
But if not, I bet we can push a button and get it to your house real quick on Amazon. Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. For those of us who don't venture out in the rain. I just don't want to step in the poodles.
Or, you know, if you come to Spirited on Thursday night, which is at 638 Bergen Street in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn, you can meet Kevin himself and hear him read from the book, and there's some poetry going to happen, and you can buy a book, and you can buy a cocktail. We're going to make a special cocktail with Oni's rum and dedicate it to Oni Madden. You might have to be jailed in order to drink it, but we're going to do it.
Well, it's good stuff. Spirit is the grooviest. This rum is the most awesomest. Kevin's book is absolutely fantastic, and thanks to everyone who came out today in Bushwick to beat this bad weather.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
We're going to eat this pizza. Yeah, we're going to drink some rum. Thanks to Liz in the booth and everyone out there in Radio Land. We'll see you next week on Art Census Seizures.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.